is Apollo Saturn Launch Control. We're now 1 hour, 5 minutes, 55 seconds and counting on the Apollo mission, the flight to land of the first men on the moon. Countdown still progressing satisfactorily. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
Space is patient. It has all the time in the world. Keeping count of that time was strictly man's idea. And so was the idea of traveling in space. The two go together. They've been going together for some time.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Liftoff.
Ignition.
All right, liftoff, and the clock has started.
The first words from an American astronaut riding piggyback on a rocket. Alan Shepard aboard Freedom 7 headed 302 miles downrange. The date, May 5th, 1961. The clock has indeed started.
Oxygen is go. Cabin pressure is holding at 5.5. Okay, it's a lot smoother now, a lot smoother. Fuel is go, 4G, 5.5 cabin. Oxygen go, all systems are go.
I was in one of the chase planes and Scott Carpenter was in another. It was not a long chase. The entire flight lasted only 15 minutes and 22 seconds from liftoff to splashdown in the Atlantic. But there was time enough for Shepard to look around.
What a beautiful view. Cloud cover over Florida, 3 to 4 tenths near the eastern coast. Obscures up through Hatteras. You can see Okeechobee. Identify Andros Island.
Hal Shepard made our first space flight. But space history, like all history, is a pageant of firsts. The first of our original group of seven astronauts to orbit Earth was John Glenn. As he was erupted into space, his voice shook with the enormity of the power needed to bust loose from the grip of gravity.
Roger, the clock is operating. We're underway.
Godspeed, John Glenn.
0G, and I feel fine. Capsule is turning around. Oh, that view is tremendous. Capsule turning around, and I could see the booster during turnaround just a couple of hundred yards behind me. It was beautiful. The sky above is absolutely black, completely black. I can see stars, though, up above. I do not have any of the constellations identified as yet. Over.
Scott Carpenter was up next, up for three orbits of the Earth. Then came that critical period of getting back. Now, all re-entries are a bit hairy, since the heat shield of the capsule is red-hot from friction with what we call the sensible atmosphere, and your life depends on getting the drogue parachute out on time. With communications blacked out, Scott's voice was heard only by the onboard tape recorder.
I hope, holds out. Getting a few streamers of smoke out behind. There's some green flashes out there. We're getting some pretty good oscillations now. And we're out of fuel. Looks from the sun like it might be about 45 degrees. Oh, it's coming like it's really going over. Think I better take a try on the drogue. Drogue out manually at 25. It's holding. Snorkel override. Emergency flow rate on. Standing by for the main. Shoot at 10. Cabin pressure, cabin altimeter, agree on altitude. Should be 13,000 now. I see the main is out and reefed, and it looks good to me. The main chute is out.
Apollo Saturn Launch Control, we've just passed the 26-minute mark in the count. T-minus 25 minutes, 53 seconds and counting. Still proceeding very satisfactorily.
June of 65, Ed White took the longest walk in history and the strangest, from Polynesia to the Caribbean. Something out of an astronomical fairy tale. A man gets out of a pillbox streaking along 103 miles above the Pacific Ocean. He has a head of glass and a golden tether. He carries an air gun and a camera. He's a satellite of the Earth as surely as the moon. As he floats through the black hush of space at 17,000 miles per hour, he chats idly with the man who was holding a seat for him in the two-man Gemini 4, Jim McDivitt, variously known as Jimbo.
Okay, I'm separated from the spacecraft.
Okay, separate from the spacecraft at this time.
All right. I think I'm dragging a little bit, so I don't want to fire the gun yet. Okay, I'm out.
Okay, he's out.
Am I in your view, Jimbo?
Glad you're
not. Don't sweat it. I'll come over to you. Now, I've come above the spacecraft. I'm under my own control.
When Ed got out, one of his thermal gloves got up and followed him. It was loose and free, floating in orbit as serenely as a star.
Really looks funny out there. See my glove out there, Jim,
does it?
Yeah. Okay, I'm coming over.
Okay, stand by.
You see me yet? Huh?
Well, there you are. You look beautiful.
Where the sun strikes Ed White, it's 350 degrees hot. Where his body is in shadow, the shadow of deep night, it is 150 degrees below zero, a 500-degree spread. Yet he is comfortable, more than comfortable. He feels great.
I feel like $1 million. This is the greatest experience. It's just tremendous.
It's so tremendous, White doesn't want to come back in. He takes pictures, crawls over and around the spacecraft. Then he becomes the first astronaut to have to be coaxed back aboard.
Let me take a close-up picture. You speared up my windshield, you dirty dog. See how it's all speared up there? It looks like there's a coating on the outside, and you've rubbed it off.
Gemini 4, Houston, Capcom.
As a matter of fact, you know, that looks like Houston down below us.
Gemini 4, get back in.
Well, this is Jim. What, got any message for us?
The flight director says get back in.
Okay. They want you to come back in now.
No, back in. Come on. We still got 3.5 more days to go, buddy.
I'm coming.
Okay.
The traffic peak of the two-man Gemini flights came late in 65, when there were actually four of us zooming through space at the same time. Frank Borman and Jim Lovell aboard Gemini 7 were already in orbit for 11 days when Tom Stafford and I lifted off to join them for a nose-to-nose space rendezvous. As we navigated Gemini 6 to within a foot of them, we could see their bearded faces.
Seven is go. Six is go.
Gemini 6
away,
Capcom. Okay, we're showing you here on the ground. Can you give me a status?
Yeah, we're in formation with 7. Everything is go here.
Roger. Congratulations. Excellent.
There seems to be a lot of traffic up here, that's all.
All the policemen.
This was around Christmas time, and you know what holiday traffic is like. Tom Stafford reported to Houston Capcom that we had spotted an unidentified object traveling in space with us, moving north to south in a polar orbit. Stand by, he said. Let me try to signal him. And we did. That's me on the harmonica. A light moment before retrofire.
This is Apollo Saturn launch control. We've passed the 11-minute mark. Now T-minus 10 minutes, 54 seconds on our countdown for Apollo 11. It's a beautiful morning for a launch to the moon. This is Kennedy launch control.
Each manned flight in the Mercury and Gemini series, and there were 16, led step by step to the day when man, for the first time, would dare to break away from the possessiveness of his home planet. The cord was cut on December 21st, 1968, by Borman, Lovell, and Anders in Apollo 8.
Transmission is coming to you approximately halfway between the moon and the Earth. We've been 31 hours, about 20 minutes into flight. We have about less than 40 hours left to go to the moon.
No other planet in the solar system, not even Jupiter, has a moon as big as ours. And Apollo 8 set out to be its willing captive. There was some anxiety on the ground when, for the first time, that speck of men and machinery disappeared behind the moon. Communication was cut off by billions of tons of rocky mass. which is a surer way of losing your radio signal than going into a tunnel. We waited for word, waited 37 long minutes.
Apollo Control Houston, we've heard nothing yet, but we're standing by.
Then, right on schedule.
We've got it. Apollo 8 now in lunar orbit. There's a cheer in this room. This is Apollo Control Houston, switching now to the voice of Jim Lovell.
Go ahead, Houston, this is Apollo 8. Very complete. Our orbit is 169.1 by 60.5.
Apollo 8, this is Houston. Roger, 169.1 by 60.5. Good to hear your voice.
For about 20 hours, Apollo 8 circled the moon, scouting its surface with a special eye, or more accurately, six special eyes, for possible landing sites. The world was with them through several live televised geography lessons and a weather report by Jim Lovell.
Houston, what you're seeing is the Western Hemisphere. Looking at the top is the North Pole. In the center, just lower to the center, is South America. I can see Baja California and the southwestern part of the United States. And it appears now that the East Coast is cloudy.
However you look at the moon, it's an impressive object. Borman, Lovell, and Anders were no less impressed by their extreme close-up view than the centuries of poets and lovers and astronomers who had peered at its bald face from afar.
This is Apollo 8, coming to you live from the moon.
Bill Anders, Jim Lovell, and myself have spent the day before Christmas up here doing experiments, taking pictures, and firing our spacecraft engines to maneuver around.
Moon is a different thing to each one of us. I know my own impression is that it's a vast, lonely, forbidding expanse of nothing. And it certainly would not appear to be a very inviting place to live or work.
And one of the amazing features of the surface is the roundness of most of the craters.
Only the very newest features have any sharp definition to them.
The vast loneliness up here on the moon is awe-inspiring. It makes you realize just what you have back there on Earth. The Earth from here is a grand oasis of the big vastness of space.
On Christmas Eve, 1968, the crew, crossing once more the warty, pockmarked landscape of the moon, transmitted along with their television pictures a text big enough to fit their mission, or any other mission in the universe, for that matter.
We are now approaching lunar sunrise, and for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness.
And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you. All of you on the good earth.
To return to the good earth, their lives depended on the engine called SPS, for Service Propulsion System. If it didn't work properly, they would be lost beyond hope of rescue. All the time they were behind the moon, the world waited to know. Then the voice of Jim Lovell, crackling through the ether from a quarter of a million miles out. The language of space is terse, full of code words, technical terms, abbreviations like AGS for abort guidance system, computer jargon like double dabble, and scientific names like Doppler-Fizeau effect and Fitzgerald-Lorentz contraction. But it has adopted names, too, like Charlie Brown and Snoopy. That was what the crew of Apollo 10, Tom Stafford, John Young, and Gene Cernan, named their command module and the lunar landing module. On May 22, 1969, Snoopy, with Stafford and Cernan, was separated from Charlie Brown to go down and fly above the lunar craters at an altitude no higher than I've flown jets routinely here at home.
Oh, Houston, this is Snoopy.
Right, Snoop, go ahead.
He's going. We is down among him, Charlie.
Roger, I hear you weaving your way up the freeway. Can you give me a post-burn report, over?
Yeah, as soon as I get my breath. I tell you, we're down here where we can touch the top of some hills, though.
Roger, great. Sounds great. We copy.
Look at that rill. That's gotta be probably Diamondback right there.
Roger, we copy.
There's enough boulders around here to fill up Galveston Bay.
Charlie, we just saw Earth rise, and it's gotta be magnificent.
When Snoopy had done all his program snooping, there was the unprecedented and complicated and hazardous problem of getting back to Charlie Brown, who was parked, so to speak, in orbit 50 miles above them. The technical dialogue of this maneuver as both vehicles sped around that bleak planet was clearly monitored back on Earth.
Tom, I'll thrust aft. 2 feet per second, I'll stop. I'll start thrusting forward and you stage fire. Got your master arm on? Okay, that's that way and then that way. Right? Yep, because we're going to be awful light. Okay, you ready?
Something went wrong.
Son of a bitch.
A switch had been overlooked. Snoopy bucked and went into a wild gyrations, wobbling all over the sky. Stafford quickly got control.
Gotta get this damn thing. You get in a gimbal lock?
Snoop, Houston, we show you close to gimbal lock.
Well, I don't know what the hell that was, babe.
Something went wild there on that staging. Thing just took off on us.
Charlie Brown, Houston, they got
hey,
staging. They had a wild gyration, though, but they got it under control.
And I tell you, that was wild, babe, and it wasn't the DAP because you were an AX. That was AX.
That was something we'd never seen before. We went to AX and...
The computer's yours, Tom.
5 minutes to the burn.
Okay, Charlie, we're with you. I think we got all our marbles.
When Snoopy and Charlie Brown rendezvoused above the moon and successfully docked, there was a cheer, like that famous shot at Concord, heard around the world.
I can see you moving over.
We got him, John. We heard him in here.
Hello, Snoopy and Charlie Brown are hugging each other.
Sir, roger that. We heard him down here.
Okay, John, that was beautiful. Just beautiful, babe.
Then a routine-sounding dialogue between Earth and sky that, in a quiet way, summed up man's mastery of the moon shuttle.
Hello, Houston, Apollo 10.
Hello, Apollo 10, this is Houston. How'd the burn go?
Roger, Houston, we are returning to the Earth.
Over. Glad to have you on the way back home, 10.
10 was back home. 11 was now ready to go up and out and on and touch the untouched planet.
Apollo Saturn launch control, T-minus 1 minute 35 seconds on the Apollo mission, the flight to land of the first men on the moon. 1 minute 25 seconds and counting.